What is the Uni? This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, with Absolute Philosopher. What is the Uni? Now, what is the Uni? What do we mean by Uni? Do we mean the University of Healing, the University of Philosophy, or do we mean by Universal? What do we mean by Uni? Well, here at the University of Healing and University of Philosophy, we mean the organization in which a given program is practiced. And here at the Uni, we practice a given program. We have two programs. And none of the organization yet has graduated into the University of Philosophy program. They have started on it, but they have not gone into it. They got excited about it at one point, but they have not gone into it. They are still with the University of Healing program, which is very adequate and very wonderful and very positive and very dynamic. Now, so for that moment, let's consider what is the University of Healing. What is the Uni, University of Healing? Is the University of Healing a place where you go and you get compliments? Or is it a place where you go and you get new imagery for your mental notebook so that you can walk a path that leads you straight to where you want to go in any area as a human being and as a divine being? Now, I say human being first because that's what we do first. We go as a human being first. Then we go as a divine being. If we try to go as a divine being on our human path, we'll stumble all over the place. We'll stumble because we're on a human path and we think that we are divine and we're untouched by the world around us. Well, unfortunately, we're all very much touched by the world around us. And the reason that we're touched by the world around us is that we have not done our coursework at the University of Healing. Our coursework at the University of Healing has one basic philosophical tenet. Now, do any of you monks know what that one basic philosophical tenet is of the University of Healing?
To be yourself, to be myself and having fun.
Exactly. Exactly. She goes to the head of the class. The only one here who knew it. Be myself. Really? You're the only one who said it. Oh, I was going to say it too. Why didn't you? I mean, why didn't you? I keep telling you, people say, oh, I was going to say, well, that's what I had in my mind too. You did not have it in your mind. If you had it on your mind, you would have said it. And this is why we, as human beings, flounder so much. Because we pretend we have it on our mind, but we don't. We pretend that we are untouched, but we aren't. We pretend that we're loving, but we're not. We pretend that we are knowledgeable, but we're not. Now, when you have a problem, and you're faced with a problem, and the problem says to you, ha 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 ha, you don't know the answer. And so what do? You say, oh my God, I got to go to school. I got to call somebody. I got to ask somebody. And Ellen, what's the teaching of Uni?
I know that.
Be myself and have fun. What's the teaching of the Uni, Ellen?
Be myself and have fun.
Thank you. I mean, I didn't want you to go further than what the first statement was, because, I mean, we're not ready for that yet, you know. Okay, now. Be myself and have fun. Be myself and have fun. Anita?
Yes?
Where is the answer?
Inside of me.
How do you get the answer from inside of you?
By listening inside.
How do you get the answer from inside of yourself by listening? What do you say?
I know the answer.
Yes. I know. The divine in me is the answer. I know the answer is in me. The answer is in me. You see, now, how many of you have the courage, the guts, to say that when you're faced with wanting to know something? Now, I pull this on you every day almost. I say, okay, how do you spell a word? And what does it mean? And you run away for the dictionary right away. I say, okay, good idea. At least you get it correct from the dictionary's point of view. Now, when you look it up in the dictionary, do you remember it? No. you found it in the dictionary, and so the next time you need it, you can look in the dictionary and it'll still be there. Mm-hmm. You know, it won't get lost from there. You know where to find it. But is that the answer? Is that the answer? Or is the answer, all right, Ingeborg, when you go within, because you know that you know that you know, what are you going within to?
To myself. To the universal knowledge.
Yes, 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 yes. She got it. You're going to the universal knowledge that is within yourself. You're going to the universal knowledge that's within yourself, not the dictionary. Mm. Now, in the dictionary, you're going to get in trouble. Because in the dictionary, the spelling, it's just off one little letter, and you got a different word. If you have the word you're looking for in the dictionary, and you're looking in the English dictionary, and then you think, well, I'm going to use my German dictionary. So you look it up in your German-English dictionary, and it's a different pronunciation, a different word. And then you go to the English dictionary from the English Isles, you know, England, and what do you find? You find totally different definitions. Russians who are trained by the British in English speak entirely different from the Americans who are trained by the American English. Why is that? It's the same language, it's the same words, it should be have the same definition, but it don't. It doesn't. Why doesn't it have the same definition? It doesn't have the same definition because does not have the same definition because each person is listening to their own inner self. Now, you say, well, Herb, that doesn't really answer the question. And I say, yes, that's true. So, I will answer it further. Ellen is brought up in an English home, and she is taught English manners, and she thinks that her English manners are impeccable, that they're beautiful, that they're uncontestable. They are just absolutely fantastic. Sylvia is brought up in a Swiss home in Swiss manners that she thinks are impeccable. And she thinks that her Swiss manners are the world's best manners and the only manners in the world that count because they're Swiss. And so the Swiss manners are the A number one manners. Now, she's taught them in a certain way, just like Ellen has taught them in a certain way in the English home. And just like Anita is taught manners in New Zealand. My goodness sakes. Right next door to the New Zealanders are what?
The Australians.
The Australians. And the Australians, like Ingeborg here, she was trained by the Australians. And she's an Aussie from way out, you know. And so what does she do? She comes out of a British background because all the Australians were prisoners in British camps and the prisons, and they brought them down to Australia. So she's really British, but she's raised in Australia, and she's got all of these Australian attitudes and definitions of terms. Now, you talk to an Australian, and you think you're talking to somebody from down under, a whole different world. And then you go to New Zealand, and what do these Kiwi people think? They think in an entirely different way again. Their attitudes are different. Their ways of hospitality are different. Lovely, and, you know, beautiful, but their ways are different. And then when Anita leaves New Zealand and heads to Switzerland to visit her family there, and she comes with her Swiss or her New Zealand jargon, the friends there, they say, we really don't understand you. And then you have other people who like to play the game, and they pretend they're from New Zealand, like John. And John talks New Zealand. He talks in all the jargon of the New Zealanders until you can't understand him. And then you say to John, John, articulate your English clearly and precisely. Well, John does not articulate the New Zealander language. He articulates British English, and he speaks it beautifully. Now, why doesn't he articulate the New Zealand language rather than the British. Well, because he believes that the British is the foundation of the New Zealand language, and so therefore it is what should be used as the criteria. Now, you see, all of us have so many criteria, so many backgrounds for our training and our understanding. And because we have so many backgrounds in our training and our understanding of just the English language, we have such diverse opinions as to what it means and how it means that. And yet, if we would do one thing, if we would use a universal language. Now, they've thought of using universal languages, and they've been unsuccessful. But what is a universal language? Who in the world speaks a universal language? Can anyone tell me right off the top of their head?
Children.
Why do children speak a universal language? They communicate with each other, and they don't care what they are, words they're saying. It's the meanings, you know. Here, you want to play with my truck? That's quite obvious. You hand your truck to the other child, and you got a smile on your face. You want to play with it? Yeah, and you go, oh, good, good, good. You know, or no, I've got my own truck. My truck is far better than yours. You know, I like to play with my truck. You know, and they don't say that because they don't have a word far better than yours. See, they don't have in their vocabulary this idea that they're superior to the other in any way. They're all equal. And they play games of babies talking in the womb, and they play baby talk, you know. And really, it's adult talk. Mm. Adult talk. What adults would think a baby might be thinking. But a baby does not think those things because a baby doesn't have the background to think it. A baby is just bare fundamentals, the bare facts, right down to the very beginning. And when we start thinking from that point of view, with our wording and our language, have any of you ever had a dog? Do you know what a dog is? A dog is a four-legged creature with a big tongue, you know. Okay, now, a dog has something else usually. What is it?
A tail.
A waggly tail. Now, what does a waggly tail mean? Could a dog wag a tail and bite you? Yes. Easy.
Yeah.
Because a dog knows that if it gives you a false image, you're going to fall for it. And they know what they're doing. They do. Now, usually a waggy tail on a dog means the dog is friendly.
Yeah.
Now, some dogs have been taught to wag their tails and be unfriendly, because these are dogs that are guard dogs and so forth, and so that people get off their guard with the guard dog. Now, what is it that a dog does? Will you please sit down? You bug me running around like that. Sit down now, and when I tell you to sit down, sit down. Now, how much of that does a dog understand?
Sit.
He understands sit, and maybe down. If you say sit to a dog, he'll sit on his backside. If you say down, he'll lay down. Now, if you say sit down, then he'll sit and lay. But if you just say down, he'll lay down. Or if you just say down, well, just down. But he doesn't need to have the Gettysburg Address read to him at the same time you say sit down, you know. Would you sit down? You're driving me crazy running around. You know, that's for your benefit. That's for your benefit. And that shows your frustration and your lack of control. And she just said, come. You know, and wait till he comes. Then when he comes, say, good boy, sit. Or down. Or whatever you want to say. And if you do that often enough, the dog will get the message and follow. But not with much talking. Shakespeare had a word for it. And he said, but as much talking doesn't make truth. And this is very true. Much talking doesn't make truth. When we can say to a dog, sit, the dog understands we mean sit. And when we say to a dog, bad dog, he said, whatever he did a moment before or two or three, and he's completely forgotten. And so you say, bad dog, and he says, what'd I do? He has no idea. Little children are like that too. They have really no idea, because they think the things they're doing are good. Now, if you say to a dog, now, here's what you do. Come here, bring the paper, open your mouth, don't chew on the paper, give me the newspaper, thank you, and then now lay down and thank you. Now, go get my slippers. You don't say, don't chew on my slippers. You say, bring me my slippers. Or you say, slipper. And the dog knows that he is to go and pick up your slipper. And if you say, slippers, the dog knows he's to get both of them. So he takes his mouth and gets both of them at the same time. Brings them. But it's true. Now, whatever you have taught him. Now, the simpler, the better. And that goes in your divine path, too. When you say, I know that I know that I know, you know the simple truth, the simple answer, and the simple answer is revealed to you because you reveal it to yourself from your infinite storehouse of universal knowledge of the universe within you. See, that's what the universe is. That's what the uni is. Now, the University of Healing and the University of Philosophy both teach the concept that you know all. That you are all, that you are all wisdom, all knowledge, all truth, all life, all love, all goodness. Now, that's the University of Philosophy, at the University of Healing. Now, the University of Philosophy teaches you that you are not all life, and that you are not all, and you are not the is, and you are not these things. What does it teach you?
Absolute.
You are the one. The absolute. You're the one. There is no separateness. There is no you and me, you know. There is no otherness. There is only
one.
And there's only
me.
Me, absolute.
I.
Now, these are things that I'm going to be taking up in little vignettes that I'll be putting onto the internet with my camera. And I wrote up a number of little statements, and I will probably have Ellen give the introduction of me to be put with the little 5-minute video him, and then we'll put them into the internet, and it should be a lot of fun to see how they come through and how we get them through. But it's just something we will do and something we'll have a lot of fun with. But this is just a sort of an entree into this wonderful world of video, uni, and I. And I'm going to call it, naturally, the absolute.
Absolute.
The absolute philosopher.
That's point. But I'm going to call it the metaphysical.
Absolute philosopher.
No, the metaphysical philosopher. See, because I'm not really absolute. I am into the relative and absolute. And the metaphysical touches into the relative. And so, this is the metaphysical philosopher. And if I were to say the absolute philosopher, theoretically, I could not talk about human relations. Mm-hmm. I could not talk about the relative world, because the absolute steps beyond that. And we'll have that too. We'll have that too. But we'll start out with the relative and do lots of good things. And if you ever have any suggestions for me, I'm always interested in hearing them and interested in knowing about them. But if I don't follow them, don't be surprised, because I got a lot of ideas of my own. And also, whenever I start talking, I just let it flow. And then you'll find, by listening, you too will know. I love you. I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you. Thank you.